This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 261 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Marcus Couch.
Yes, sir.
And sorry about the no show last week, folks, but...
You're turning us into WordPress Monthly now.
Yes. But, you know, I've been in the doldrums. There's some things going on, and I just... wasn't comfortable doing a show last week. But here we are. Everything's okay. So far.
Good.
Today we got a great guest on the show. We're going to dive into an awesome topic. But before we do that, Marcus, we have an iTunes review, 5 stars.
Yes, sir. We certainly do. It is titled Essential Listening. It is from Bill465, and he left us this review on January 19th. If you use WordPress, WordPress Weekly is essential listening. They talk to just about everyone that is important in the WordPress community and then some. Heck, just the plugin picks of the week are worth the price of admission.
How about that?
Also, you got to appreciate them for their love of deep dish pizza.
Yes. Oh, I love me some deep dish pizza.
I had it in Vegas. It was nice. Nice.
And we also received an email by, I want to say it's, how would you pronounce it? Piotr?
Piotr?
Yes. And he says that I just wanted to shoot you a short email saying how much I appreciate your work on WordPress Weekly. I've been listening to the podcast for over 2 years, and it has always been a great source of news and inspiration. I also appreciate your honesty and willingness to talk about difficult topics. Keep up the great work you're doing, and thank you one more time. Thank you very much for listening and for the email. And, I think – it's been a while since I've listened to any other WordPress-based podcast, but the one thing that we do here on WordPress Weekly is we keep it real.
Yeah,
we don't really sugarcoat anything. You know, we talk about real life situations, real life happenstances, and that's just an aspect. It's an aspect of the show.
Yeah, and by the way, I do want to say thank you very much for that email. We do need some more iTunes reviews. Because here's how it looks right now on iTunes in terms of the rankings. You got my other show, WordPress Plugins A to Z, going on. And then you got Matt Medeiros right after that, and then WordPress Weekly. We can't have that, people. We cannot have Matt Medeiros in between my two shows. It's just not going to happen. I'm not making a Matt sandwich right now. So we need more reviews. Matt Medeiros needs to go to the back of the line. He knows what I'm talking about. I'm just teasing him. But seriously, if you do like the show, please head on over to iTunes and leave us that review.
Yes, indeed. We always appreciate reading your reviews. And you may have heard a third voice throughout the intro, and that is our guest, who is Cameron Barrett, who is a blog pioneer, veteran of open source. And he's managing 70-plus WordPress sites at Newark Public Schools. He's also the founder of School Presser LLC, a service dedicated to migrating school district websites to WordPress. And he had an excellent presentation on this subject at WordCamp US 2016, held in Philadelphia. I was probably in the hallway track at the time, so I didn't get a chance to see it in person. However, it is on WordPress.tv, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. But this topic of WordPress for schools is a pretty interesting topic. So, Cameron, thanks a lot for taking some time out of your busy schedule to be on the show today.
Thanks, Jeff.
So we could get really deep into so many facets of this topic. But let's start off in the beginning. How did you get involved with WordPress?
So I've actually been using WordPress for about 6 or 7 years now. But before I was a WordPress developer and user, I was a pretty heavy Drupal developer and user. I was building some pretty big Drupal websites back in 2004, 2005. One of the biggest was a snowboard magazine website for Snowboard Magazine out in California. And at one point, I think they had 70 or 80,000 members in their forums inside Drupal. And, you know, I was a big fan of Drupal. And over the years, it got a little creakier and creakier. And then it took really, really long time for Drupal 8 to come out. So people's choices were Drupal 6 or a heavy migration to Drupal 7 and waiting for Drupal 8. And at some point, I just kind of gave up. And I said, I'm not waiting anymore. I'm just going to switch everything over to WordPress. And that was probably around 2009, 2010. And I just started doing WordPress development and I fell in love with it.
And let me ask you, now that you're a developer in WordPress for so long, is there any feature that you encountered within Drupal that you look at WordPress now and go, man, if it only just had this one thing Drupal did?
They're actually pretty much on par with each other. I can't really say that there's one feature that one CMS that has it, one the other doesn't. You know, you can do just about everything in Drupal 8 now that you can, and you can do in WordPress. I think the one thing that where WordPress shines is you have a lot more people doing development for plugins with WordPress than you do with people building Drupal modules for Drupal. It's definitely much bigger. It was 1.5 billion downloads of WordPress plugins and over 40 or 50,000 plugins available in the repository. I mean, it's just Drupal pales in comparison.
So your presentation at WordCamp US inspired me to look at a couple different local school district websites just to see what if they were using WordPress, Drupal, or some other CMS. And it turns out most of them were using proprietary systems. One that I saw was eSchoolView. It's actually based in Columbus, Ohio. And with your work involved with tell us a little bit about your project at Newark Public Schools, where they were using a proprietary CMS, which was cost boatloads of money to maintain and work with, and how you negotiated a migration over to WordPress.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back a little bit and tell a story first. And I think that'll give people some insight into how I ended up where I'm at.
Okay.
So it was the summer of 2013. And I was looking around for a job. I'd just come off working for a World Economic Forum based out of Geneva, doing Drupal development, of all things. And I had a job offer from Toys R Us, which is headquartered right here in New Jersey. And I was like, oh, I really wanted that job. I really, really wanted the job at TRS. And it was a local commute for me. I didn't have to go back into the city every day. I really, really wanted it. And after meeting with them a number of times, they said to me, oh, well, the development team is in Poland. And the job, which is global, I think the job title was something like a manager of global UX for their e-commerce platform. They're retooling the whole thing. And one of the stipulations of the job was to go over to Poland a bunch of times and meet with the developers there. And what I realized was that would take me away from my wife and my beautiful daughter too much. And I'd just come off a 2-year job where I was going to Switzerland a lot. And my marriage was a little on the rocks and get kind of sketchy. And I realized it was because I wasn't home enough. And so I made the decision to stay local, but instead of working for Toys R Us, I took the job at Newark Public Schools, where I sold them on coming in and replacing a proprietary CMS with an open source solution. And at the time, I hadn't decided whether I wanted to use Drupal or WordPress, but in the end, I chose WordPress.
So tell us a little bit about that, about how you sold them on open source. I find that the negotiation process rather interesting.
Yeah, so I kind of flew in under the radar. So we had a new director of communications at the time who was looking around for somebody to come in and overhaul all the website properties inside the district. I was referred to him through a colleague of mine. And I came in and I explained to him what I would do. Here's the plan. You know, here's how much it would cost. And through those conversations, he said, well, we're spending $60,000 a year just on website hosting for this proprietary system. And I literally fell out of my chair. It was like, you're spending how much? as I said, I can turn this around. We're going to spend, you know, $20,000-$30,000 in development in WordPress, and then you own the code. So you don't have any costs beyond year two and three, other than your hosting costs. We do have a dedicated managed server with WP Engine, and we're paying. Again, this is all public information, so I'm not saying anything I shouldn't be saying. We are currently paying $600 a month for a dedicated managed server. All of our sites combined get around 1 to 1.5 million page views a year. Per month. So it's pretty heavily trafficked. So we do need the dedicated managed server aspect of it. There's no way this site would run on a shared hosting server.
And are we talking about WordPress multi-site or a lot of single installs of WordPress?
It is mostly a giant, really, really giant multi-site. I think our database is around 40 or 50 gigabytes right now.
Wow.
It's pretty big.
So, how many users are in that incarnation of that multi-site?
It depends on how you define a user. If it's just somebody who's logging in doing editing, it's probably around 50 or 60 people. Mm-hmm. But if it's your students who don't do any logins to it, I mean, but they can log in as a subscriber, then it's upwards of 40 or 50,000.
Nice.
So. Wow. And as someone who has this experience, you know, I have not, there's been roadmaps published on the Make Core blogs in terms of WordPress development on changes and things and ideas for WordPress multi-site. It's not really been a high focus of development within the past, I don't know, 2 or 3 years. Is there any quirks, anything specific from your experience with multi-site that you'd like to see the team work on? Any major improvements that would make your life easier?
The only issues I ever really run into are when plugins are not coded to meet multi-site requirements.
Okay.
Multi-site by itself, it's like, yeah, I mean, it works, and you can find workarounds. But when you're relying on a plugin that doesn't really take multi-site into consideration, it's just a big failure all around. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see some more documentation on how to write a plugin so that it's multi-site capable.
So we talk about on this show, and it's sort of the open source ethos of being able to own your code, own your data. And that's one of the powerful things about using open source software such as WordPress. And you had this story where it really highlighted the impact of being able to own your code. And we don't have to name the vendor, but could you share that story of trying to migrate from a proprietary CMS into WordPress, but you had a hard time getting the data because of intellectual property issues?
Yeah. So there's two stories with that vendor, and I won't mention their name because I'm not actually legally allowed to. So I will not mention their name on air. The first story was I was working within their CMS, and I was trying to do a pan and zoom map of all the schools within the district. Right. So we're, you know, 67, 68 schools in an urban district. So with the largest school district in New Jersey. And I thought it'd be really cool to build a Google map that could do pan and zoom and plot all the schools on that top of that map. So I installed a bunch of inline code into their template editor. And then I realized that I couldn't load jQuery over the top of the version of jQuery they were loading. And it was just throwing errors all over the place. But the version of jQuery they were loading in their template was too old for me to use the pan and zoom features I wanted. So I called up for tech support and I said, hey, can I just get you to upgrade the version of jQuery that you're loading for our sites? Because it's outside of the template structure that I had access to. And they said, we'll get back to you on that. So a couple weeks go by. I call them up again and say, hey, can I get an upgrade to jQuery? Next thing I know, the account rep calls me and says, yeah, we can do that for you, but it's going to be $20,000.
The joys of proprietary
and solutions. I'm like, seriously? You want to charge us $20,000 to upgrade your system, you know, so that we can do features that we want, you know, to do things that we want to do on our sites. It was kind of just a big failure on their part. So this is the same vendor, another story. So I made the decision to migrate off of them, and I called them up again, opened a ticket. And I said, hey, can I get a dump of the database? It's a, you know, MSQL, right? I can pretty easily take a, you know, take the data from a SQL dump and put it into MySQL and just map the database fields from one database to the other. You know, pretty straightforward database migration. And they said, hey, well, let me get back to you on that. That's always their answer. We don't know. We'll get back to you on that.
Let's run it by legal.
So exactly. And so they, so a couple of weeks go by and I said, hey, I'm still waiting for that database dump. A
couple of weeks.
Yeah. and they're like, well, we talked to our legal department and said, and they said that we can't give you a dump of your data. And I was like, huh, what are you talking about? It's our data, right? And they agreed, it's your data. And I said, well, can I get a dump of our data then? They said, nope, can't give that to you. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And they explained to me, and I actually ran this past our legal department as well. They explained to me that if they give me a database dump of our data, from that database dump, I could derive the database schema. And they claim intellectual property on that database schema. And so technically and legally, they're correct. They couldn't give me a dump of our data. So since I couldn't get a dump, the only thing I could do was scrape. So I paid a developer. You guys probably know him, but I don't think we're allowed to mention names on the air. I paid a developer $9,000 to write a database. I'm sorry, to write a page scraping tool for WordPress that was specifically targeting this vendor's websites. And it's a pretty simple scraping tool. Basically, it identifies in the page structure a unique identifier where you can start and stop the script, where the scrape starts, where it stops, and it just lifts all that text and injects it into WordPress post the WP post table. And it grabs all the media assets and PDFs and everything that's attached to that page, and then it stores them as media post attachments. So, you know, $9,000 to do that, which sounds like a lot of money, but that script has come in useful a few times. But if I think about what would have cost me to pay a team of, you know, 20 or 30 interns an entire summer to hand migrate that text, you know, all that copy and all that content and all those PDFs and all those images, you know, page by page by page over 68 websites, it was certainly a lot more than $9,000.
Wow. So, you know, it's just a fine example of, you know, what could happen if you go down the line with the proprietary system. You know, you could find yourself for, you know, it's interesting to say it's your data, but they can't give it to you.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Marcus, you're going to have to reconnect because we can't even hear you.
Yeah, it's all choppy.
We'll let Marcus reconnect. But, so give us – let's talk a little bit again about the case study of the Newark Public Schools. You know, the year one cost was, I think, $64,400, and that included I think it was content migration, dedicated server hosting, upfront development cost. And as the years progressed after the initial upfront cost, the school district saved quite a bit of money.
Yep. So year one is always going to be the most expensive because you have to do your development, you have to build your theme, you have to do your design, you have to do all your data integration. So in year one, we spent $30,000 on a WordPress development company. Who built the theme for us. The design came out of our in-house, so we built the design and helped do the template integration. The database scraping was $9,000. We had a mobile app we built for $500 using AppPressor. We don't use that mobile app anymore, but we're actually replacing it with a different solution that's not WordPress-specific but serves the district's needs better.
What was your experience in AppPressor in terms of building it and then releasing actual content?
It pretty good. I mean, I'm a big fan of AppPressor. I think that it serves a really useful purpose if you need a basic mobile app for your site. But if you're trying to do a lot of other types of integration stuff, it's where it doesn't work that well. Like there's no way for me to hook like our grading system and our attendance system up to AppPressor. It's just no hook there. So if we want to send a push notification to a parent when a student gets picked up at a bus stop, we can't do that with our with an Ampressor powered mobile app. Mm-hmm.
So we look at schools. They have these proprietary systems, which in many cases, based on some research I did, you know, a lot of these school districts have very crappy websites. They're not mobile. They're not responsive. They're light years behind what WordPress offers out of the box today. How do these school districts end up with these solutions that, you know, that we know are far behind what WordPress offers today?
Yeah, one of the issues is a lot of school districts basically re-sign the same contract year after year. And so it's not uncommon to run into a school district that's been using the same vendor for 10 years. Unfortunately, a lot of the vendors have not kept up with the modern website design trends and technologies. And so a lot of the school district websites have, you know, circa 2005 table-based page layouts, not responsive. Everything's like a big wall of text.
There's probably still quite a few sites up there that, like you illustrated, use Flash.
Yeah. Yeah. the Flash is still a problem, which is unfortunate because it doesn't work at all on iPhones or iPads. So, and we know that kids love their iPhones and iPads. It's like you ask the parent to go to a Flash powered website because it's all Flash based templates, and they're just going to be a big, you know, big black squares because the Flash files aren't loading. So let me go back to why there's a reason why a lot of these school districts have kind of crappy websites. And I'm not saying all of them, but there's a big, pretty big chunk of districts out there that still have very old looking websites that are not up to date. The reason for that is because a lot of districts have been using something called E-rate money. Now, E-rate funds is money that comes from the federal government to pay for technology rollout in public schools. You know, think of it as a grant from the government to pay for your technology services in the school district. So all that E-rate money comes from fees that you pay every time you pay a telecommunications bill. So if you're paying a cable bill or a phone bill or a cell phone bill or a broadband bill, there's always this USF fee, Universal Services Fund fee, that's baked into that bill from Verizon or AT&T or Sprint. All those fees collectively are somewhere around, I think, $12 or $15 billion a year. That's given to the federal government, given to the FCC to use for E-rate funds. And so, if a school district is paying 90% of their website hosting and development costs with E-rate funds, because it's free money, they have no motivation to replace that vendor. So what that means is, well, there's a reason for that. So in July of 2015, the FCC had something passed called the E-Rate Modernization Act. And what that did is it basically took a whole bunch of services off the list of eligible services that you could pay for with E-rate money. And so suddenly you had a lot of school districts going, wait, we don't have that $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 in E-rate money to pay for our website CMS, which is proprietary. And the answer is no, because that's one of those services that came off the eligible services list. You could no longer use federal grant money in the form of E-rate to pay for website hosting management solutions. So now we have a lot of school districts in the past 2 years going, oh, well, it has to come out of our regular budget. But they then realize that they're paying way too much money for the services they've been getting. And so they're starting to look around for better, cheaper solutions. And we're going to start seeing more and more school districts every budget cycle migrate to Drupal and WordPress and some of these other open source solutions.
So is this one of the motivations behind the creation of SchoolPressor? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so what I realized is after I fulfilled this project at Newark, and I'm actually still a full-time employee at Newark Public Schools, but I do a lot of stuff on the side. So I still build a lot of WordPress sites outside of my day job. What I realized is I could take that model that I established at Newark and I could apply it to every school district in the country. And there's 14,000 of them. And we have 14,000 public school districts in this country that all need a more affordable website hosting solution and technology they can use that's not out of date and out of touch with what they're trying to do. I realized that it needed to be a services-based company that would go out to these school districts and help them sort through those issues and help them migrate their websites from a proprietary CMS that they're paying too much for to WordPress. And in the end, you save taxpayer dollars because the E-rate money is gone. They're never going to get it again for website hosting. It has to come out of their regular budget. So a lot of districts are saying, well, our budgets are already tight. We can't afford it. So what do? They have no website because they can't pay the vendor, or do they go to a more affordable solution? And I think the answer is they're going to go to a more affordable solution.
And I was sort of inspired by your presentation, and I started to look up to see my school district, see what proprietary CMS they were using, and I was trying to figure out the cost, how much my school district was paying for that CMS, how much they're paying the vendor, and finding that information. I know, since it's taxpayer funded, I should be able to easily find the budget, but my Google Foo is not strong enough. I was looking up budget minutes, fiscal year budgets, and even if I did find something, it's probably buried under the item of technology or technology and services. And then so when I went to the actual vendor's website to look at, if they have any prices, they actually negotiate with every client. So there's always probably a custom price for each client that they have. So, determining how much money the school district is paying for this proprietary, piece of crap, in my opinion, based on what I saw, is that it's hard to figure out.
Yeah, some of that information is easily found as public information, and some of it is we'll put it in squares, in quotes, public information, unquote, because while it's public, it's not really public in the sense that it's broken down by line item. And it varies from state to state and from district to district. Sometimes the information is just never shared at all, even though it's supposed to be, and in which they're probably breaching some kind of law, because it is public taxpayer dollars being spent. Therefore, the information should be available. You may have to request it, or you may have to go and find the right person or the right board member or the right, the right person in the district and ask, hey, can I get a copy of that budget that shows line items? Assuming that information is going to be on the internet, it may or may not be. And it really depends on the state. It really depends on the district.
So your value proposition in this whole thing became not how much does it cost, but how much out of your budget can I save you by moving to this other platform?
Yeah, one of the things I say is when I go talk to a district, I say, well, I can pretty much guarantee that in year one, I can save you 50%. I'll cut your budget in half in year one. If you're using a proprietary CMS vendor and they share with me how much they're spending, I can pretty much, not always, but I can pretty much say, hey, if you're spending $30,000, I'll do it for $15,000, for year one.
Wow.
And then for year two, it's even less because they're just paying, support and
maintenance,
and hosting and maintenance. So it's there's no development. It's just maintenance. Or I'll train them how to maintain it themselves. And that's a different service. So it's an easy sell. But it's also a hard sell because the sales cycle is very, very, very long in these districts. So a district that wants to replace a technology vendor for this upcoming school year, you need to start talking with them a year ago. So right. it's anywhere from 6 to 18 months of talking to a district and getting them, getting their buy-in, putting a plan together. And that's very difficult for a small company to do because the account management piece of it and the sales cycle piece of it is so long, you can't afford to pay a sales guy for 18 months, to maintain that account and try to land that account. But what's interesting is the enterprise companies can, and that's the direction, that's what a lot of these bigger companies are trying to do. We have companies like Blackboard and Blackbaud who are acquiring a lot of the proprietary CMS vendors that we've talked about. And they're bundling them all together, but because they're a big enterprise level company, they have that enterprise sales cycle in place. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem with that is every time you go enterprise sales, you're doubling and tripling the cost of what it should be. And you have to educate the district. Look, you need to stop. You need to stop buying enterprise level software because you're a public school district. You just, there's no need for it.
Do these proprietary companies also get into the pockets of, in a political sense, because people have to generally run for school board? Do they, are they involved that heavily even before somebody becomes a school board member to?
I actually haven't seen that all that much because it's not, well, it's all, it's one, it's somewhat illegal. I mean, a school board member is an elected official. They're not allowed to accept bribes or, you know, gifts or anything like that from a vendor.
It's the same as true, but yeah, they could get campaign money while they're running for that office.
Honestly, I haven't really seen it.
Okay.
I'm sure there's probably some cases out there where that kind of thing has happened.
But... All right. I think I'm going to be a lobbyist for the other side.
Well, but our public taxpayer, I'm sorry, our public school district budgets are so tight that, you know, anything we can do to save money and help these school districts save money is something we should be doing. And that's really what motivates me, what drives me to do what I'm doing.
And it's not like you have, you know, if we think of these proprietary systems in these companies, they're made up of, I don't know, 10, 20, 30, who knows how many people if you add in sales teams and the team, the development teams are working on this product. And you shared a story of somebody who recently migrated a huge district of schools to WordPress, and it was just one person who did it in his spare time.
Yeah. So I was doing my WordPress for schools research back in 2013, 2014. And I came across a school district in Utah that's even bigger than the one that I work for. And it's a district called Granite School District, and it's somewhere outside of Salt Lake City. They have 92 schools, so it's a really big district. And I realized that they migrated the entire thing to WordPress. And so I started looking into, you know, who actually did that work. And I realized it was this guy named Chris. I called him up. I found his information on Twitter or whatever. And I called him up and I said, or emailed him and I said, "Hey, Chris, you know, this is a really good job you did here. I want to, you know, I'm really impressed. I'm doing the same thing over here on the East Coast. And I just wanted to, you know, say that you did a really good job. And I'm wondering how big your resources team is. You know, how many people do you have working on this thing?" And he said, "Oh, it's just me. I'm a part-time employee at the school district. And, I did it all by myself. I did it all by myself." And I said, I'm like, "What? Really?" I couldn't believe it. There's one guy who did all that work by himself. And maybe he had more time than I had, but I was really impressed that one person could do all of that work. It was really, really underscores the power of open source and how good WordPress is out of the box.
So one of the – I know during the survey after the first WP Campus, which was one of the first events of its kind geared towards WordPress in higher education last year out in Sarasota, Florida, there was a survey that was conducted where people in the higher ed sector filled out the survey, and there was these misconceptions of WordPress that are sort of holding it back. And one was, well, WordPress is just for blogging, and two was the security aspect where it's just – The public image of WordPress is that it's not secure and it's just for blogging. How do you combat that, or how do you sell WordPress to people who may have heard about WordPress or heard that it's insecure or it's just for blogs?
You explain to them that no software is ever secure. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's proprietary or not. That if it's that there's no such thing as secure software. Most of the attack vectors, the exploit vectors for all these different systems are pretty much identical across all of them. So if you discover an SQL exploit for WordPress, you can take that same exploit and try it against Drupal or any SQL-based system. And that's going to be the case for any software. You know, if you look at the exploit vector, it's not secure, or it's probably not going to be secure. And you kind of have to educate people that about this. It's just because somebody says it's insecure, it doesn't mean that it's not. I mean, it probably is. You know, you have somewhat of a level of security by obscurity with proprietary systems, but because you have fewer people looking at that code, it's more likely to be less secure than open source.
So in your experience in the training aspect of all this, you know, in the Newark Public School District, you switched from whatever system you were using to WordPress, and you had to, I think, retrain everybody who was using these systems to log in. I don't know, if teachers, staff, whatnot. How did you handle the training aspect, and is it an ongoing process? Because WordPress is ever-evolving software, and it's the turnaround cycle is pretty quick, although not so much this year, because actually this year they've sort of flipped the whole development process on its head, so we're not going to have three guaranteed major releases this year. They're going to just come out whenever they're ready. But how do you guys handle the training aspect of WordPress?
What we did is we identified one or two people at each of the schools who would act as a technology coordinator for WordPress in their school. And then we invite those people on a monthly basis to come into the central office and sit through WordPress training classes that we give them. And it's basically, it's anything from the rudimentary of how do you create a post, how do you add an image, how do you style text, to I want to do something more complicated, like build a document library for these 500 PDFs that I'm storing. You know, how do I do that? And we base the training, it's a lot of individualized training, but we allow them to do whatever they want to their websites within reason.
And then the kids these days, you know, they're growing up. You know, there's a certain generation that's grown up with iPads and iPhones. So WordPress was always a thing. Have you been able to get the youth involved in these migration projects, or managing the site, or getting them to educate others on how to use the software?
No, we actually had. I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say with a caveat. We had a proposal in place to put together a youth technology team that would help us, you know, help the schools keep their sites up to date. And we had it ready to go, and we had advisors in place who were, you know, teachers who volunteered to be the advisor for the kids. And it was rejected by some people in senior management who didn't think it was a good idea. So yes, I mean, the structure is there, and as long as the will is there and you have buy-in from the right people, it's certainly something that can be done. And, you know, the political structure within every district is different. So yeah, it's just a matter of figuring out what that is and getting the buy-in from the right people.
Is there any buy-in from the teacher's perspective? Are they creating... Like, ideally, I'd love to be able to see a local school that not only has their stuff online in terms of, you know, the paperwork and all the rest of it, but...
That's one of the things that we've been exploring. I mean, we've thought about turning on teacher pages, but there hasn't been really a big demand for it yet. I think teachers have been doing a lot of their own websites, you know, using lots of different free services out there, you know, including Edublogs and Wix and Weebly. And they're using all these sites, but they don't tell us about them. So we kind of discover them on our own. So one thing we did do is the curriculum department kind of stipulated that if you want a teacher page, you have to use Google Sites. And so we actually set up a lot of Google Sites templates for them. They're branded to their schools. So every school has their own branded template for Google Sites. One of the things that I've been trying to do is figure out how to connect Google Sites to WordPress. And I had a really good plan, because there actually is a Google Sites API that would allow you to write a WordPress plugin that would then allow you to edit a Google site through WordPress admin, which sounds really cool, right? But Google Sites 2.0 just came out, and there's no API. So I'm not sure what the future of that idea is. I have to think about it some more.
So things like the tin can API and all that, you're just not utilizing those things yet? Or do you see a market for it or a trend going that way? Or where it's like, okay, so tin can API uses something called the LRS. It's different from LMS, which is learning management system. LRS is learning record storage. And it's something that I've been kind of fascinated with lately, where you could create a game, and then based on the results of how a child scores in the game, that alters the curriculum speed and frequency and subject matter in which they learn. That's probably too deep, huh?
I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of different, you know, ed tech services and companies out there. Unfortunately, what I've seen is a lot of them are very proprietary and they do not connect with open source solutions. And so we're running into the same exact problem we have with using WordPress as a CMS. We're having the same problem with, hey, how do we use WordPress as an LMS, or how do we use it as a tool for helping students, you know, learn? You know, how can you gamify that? And, you know, even here at Newark, we have, you know, up something like a dozen different third-party services that we're using in, you know, from the curriculum perspective.
Wow. So those, I'm so glad that you're on today, that I could get these kinds of perspectives, because as I'm getting more into talking about, in my own right, membership sites and learning and e-learning and those kinds of things, that's very interesting to know that these things that I feel are the latest and greatest innovations are probably just way too heavy for your typical school district.
They are. It depends on the districts. Like, some districts are very, very tech savvy, and they have a really good, like, you know, CTO, or they have a really good person who's up to speed on technology. And then other districts are so far behind that they're never going to catch up.
Right.
It's just the nature of the industry, so to speak. There is one company that's starting to make really good inroads in getting a lot of these systems to talk to each other. And they're a startup out in California called Clever. They have this thing called Clever API, that basically what they've done is they've created like an open data API that allows you to hook, you know, third-party systems together. So not in the sense of like if this, then that, or Zapier, but in the sense that if you make your systems compatible with the Clever API, then other Clever API compatible systems are compatible with yours.
Wow, and congratulations, by the way, for being the first guest on the show to accurately pronunciate Zapier.
Yeah, I still don't get it right. So I have two more questions for you, Cam. We're going to wrap it up here. The first is, you're the founder of SchoolPressor, but when you type in SchoolPress into Google, it's very difficult to find you because there's about a million other school presses out there. Have you thought about maybe switching your company's name? Or?
So there's a couple issues. The original name of the company was SchoolPressor, and then the original name of the company was SchoolPress, and then I switched it to K-12 Presser because there's a copyright trademark issue out there. And then I switched it back to SchoolPress, and then I switched it to SchoolPressor. So now what I'm saying is SchoolPress is a service of SchoolPressor.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, because there's SchoolPress.me, there's SchoolPress.co, there's SchoolPress this, SchoolPress that. There's a service that was, I think, using WordPress or something in 2012, and they announced that they're going to have this new thing, and it was going to be called SchoolPress. I'm like, man, how do you differentiate yourself from all those?
So SchoolPress.me is the product that came out of Brian Messenlinger's WordPress.
Yeah, it's like an open, so you can create classes and stuff.
Yeah, I have it right here in front of me. So Brian Messenlinger and Jason Coleman wrote this book about 4 years ago. It's Building Web Apps with WordPress. And SchoolPress.me is a product in that book. So they basically walk you through how they created it. But it's a few years old now. Some schools are using it, but it's kind of under the radar. But it's at schoolpress.me. The other thing called SchoolPress is a service that was created by a vendor called Whipple Hill that handles that handles a lot of private schools. So it's a little bit different market. Private schools are a lot easier to sell to than public schools. for various reasons. So they still have a pretty big market in the private school district. Whipple Hill sold themselves to a bigger company a few years back called Black Bod. And so Black Bod is, I think they're out of Atlanta or something. I'm not sure where they're out of. But they're a pretty big company that sells a lot of enterprise level systems. And they bought Whipple Hill as like a K-12 market for them as a vertical.
So you need to get social with those domains a little bit. Why don't you go for like realschoolpress.com?
Yeah, the real one.
Yeah, I'm working on my marketing. It's certainly not up to speed. My apologies on that.
So there's a couple of tips we've said throughout the show, but for last but not least, if any of our listeners out there are maybe in a position where they want to try and get their school district switched over, they're using a proprietary CMS and they want to get it switched over to WordPress, and they can help out with that and they know what they're doing. Give us just some tips on what they should do, some steps they should take.
Well, the first tip is to email me, call me. I'm happy to help. I'm happy just to give advice too. I mean, again, I'm not really in it. I'm not really in this 100% to make money. I mean, that's not my goal. My goal and my mission is to save money for the school districts. And if I can build a business by doing that, I'm going to. And that's always been my motivating factor. I come from a family of school teachers. And while I'm not a school teacher myself, I never have been a school teacher, I have the same kind of mentality of our schools are great and we need to keep them great. And let's save. And if they're struggling with finances and money, let's figure out ways we can save them money. And this is what I'm doing to contribute.
Okay. Well, Cameron, I want to thank you so much for coming on our show, telling us a little bit about the aspect of getting WordPress into schools and the school districts. I think it's a fascinating subject, and I'm going to look more into. And definitely probably going to have you back on either later this year or a few months from now to get a progress report from you on how you're doing, and maybe we can look at some other case studies or maybe even bring someone else on the show to talk about this subject more in depth. But how can people who are interested in what you're doing, how can they follow you or get in touch with you?
Yep, they can find me on Twitter at Camworld, CAMWORLD. I also have a kind of a very quiet school presser Twitter account, as well as Facebook page, and they can email me, Cameron@schoolpress.co, or they can give me a call. My phone number is on the internet. Just Google my name plus phone number, and I'm sure it's out there.
And again, you can find his presentation, which you did both at WordCamp Raleigh and WordCamp US. You can find them both, I believe, on WordCamp WordPress.tv. I always want to say WordCamp.tv, but it's WordPress.tv. So again, Cameron, thanks a lot for being on the show.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Marcus.
Not a problem. So,
you're welcome.
That was a great interview. It's a subject I'm going to look deeper into and probably write up a pretty good story about. Before we get into the plugin picks of the week, wrapping up the show, I want to let everybody know that there is a secure release of WordPress available. It's 4.7.2. This was released back on January 26th. So if you have not updated your sites, you should do so immediately. It should have updated automatically if you have automatic updates enabled, but it solves a couple of security issues, an SQL injection, cross-site scripting vulnerability. There is also unauthenticated privilege escalation vulnerability in the REST API endpoint. So that was an issue. And I know Security Today has published technical details on these exploits. So if you have not updated, you want to do so as soon as possible before all the bad guys start taking advantage of these exploits. So there you have it. We'll get into some of the other stuff, some of the news, probably in next week's show. But Marcus, what do we have for plug-in picks of the week, which apparently is worth the price of admission alone?
That's what I hear. That's what all the cool kids say. Before we get into that, I do want to preface it with a kind of a note on a plug-in that we talked about previously called WP Tasks After Install.
Oh, yes.
It's a really nice plugin that goes in, and right after you install it, it'll change the slugs for your categories. It changes the permalink. It deletes Kismet and Hello Dolly, and does a couple other cool things. Just from personal experience, I found out you have to run this right after the install, because I tried it. I installed a theme and a couple of other things, and I'm like, oh, I gotta run that plugin and make sure it changes everything, and then it deletes the theme. So make sure that you don't have anything set up on your site before you run this thing. Everybody else has liked it, and we've had a lot of Twitter response on that too.
Awesome.
So plugin picks of the week. Let's start off with number one, which is Birthday Mail BP. And this actually works for BuddyPress. It's an automated function that automatically sends out birthday emails to your members on their birthday. So it's a great way to express happy birthday to them, and also a great way to present a coupon or a discount to that particular member if you should have any kind of e-commerce products or anything. Really nice. It's called Birthday Mail BP.
By the way, speaking of birthdays, I want to send today is, I guess I could call him a friend of the show.
What? You he's only been on once. Well, he's not a friend of the show. Right, he's our friend.
Right. But he's our friend.
Yeah.
But we have to get him on a few more times so he could be a friend of the show. But happy birthday, Mr. Jeff Matson.
Yes. Happy birthday, Jeff. Second plugin is WC Document Preview. And this works much like the same Amazon ebook functionality where you can sort of preview the book and take a look inside. This will let you take your ebooks, PDFs, digital products, and anything that lends itself to previews and let the potential consumer view a couple pages in the document before they make that purchase. Really nice feature. It's adds that degree of professionalism when selling ebooks. It's called WC Document Preview. And Jeff, I struck gold. I found something that we've been talking about for years. It's called TM Style Switcher, and it allows you to save the theme settings, like customizer stuff, as a skin and export it. And then you can switch between them at any moment and even transfer them between installations. So I've asked for it. Somebody made it. It's called TM Style Switcher. And those are my plugin picks of the week.
Fantastic. And oh, it's actually made by Template Monster.
Ah, that's the TM.
Yeah, that's the TM. So
where have they been?
There you go. No, that's interesting. Speaking of Template Monster, there is an email I have. I'd like to get. I might have someone on the show from Template Monster come on.
Yeah,
and tell us about their experience in the WordPress side of things and just the nature of their business. That might be a good show.
I think it will.
All right, so that's going to do it for this week's episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on WP Tavern. com, and you can follow me on Twitter, which I quit, but I'm back because
you already quit.
Well, I quit Twitter and now I'm back. So you follow me on Twitter at Jeffro JEFFR0 and Marcus.
You picked the wrong time to come back, man. Everybody's crazy on Twitter these days.
Yes.
You can find me at my website, MarcusCouch.com, also membershipcoach.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Marcus Couch. I'm also at Marcus Couch on Instagram. And I'm also trying to figure out Snapchat. For some reason, I have 15,000 followers on Snapchat, and I've never even used it. So I don't get that. Anyway.
Well, at least you know what Snapchat is, unlike Bill Belichick.
I don't even know who that is.
Come on. All right. So that's the coach of the New England Patriots.
Oh, that's why I don't know. I gave up on football this year.
There you go. All right. So that's going to do it, everybody. Enjoy, have a safe rest of the week and weekend. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon.